Moses is herding sheep in Midian for his father-in-law, Jethro. He's there because he was fighting injustices in Egypt, and it didn't end well. His people were slaves in Egypt, and he pushed back against their retreat and their mistreatment, as any of us would instinctively do, to see a wrong and want to make it right, to see people being hurt and wanting to step in to address that hurt. But Moses was misunderstood, and eventually everyone turned against him, those he was advocating for, as well as the forces of opposition. And there's no more acute sense of estrangement, I believe, in this life than to have one's good intentions misconstrued. Hope for a better world, like anything else, hope is durable, yes, but also so delicate. This young man who had hoped for that better world, more fair, more just, when we meet him in today's story, now is hoping only for a regular paycheck. I hope I'm not describing you today, but I could be describing you, describing me. Weariness with the work, the great work, can wear us down until all we're wanting is to be left alone so we can just get by and leave the great work to somebody else with more heart, more enthusiasm, more gifts and graces for it. Moses, in this moment, gave expression to what generations later would be the psalmist's cry, "Oh, that I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would wander afar and lodge in the wilderness, far from the raging wind and tempest." So he does. We're told that he takes the sheep that are under his care beyond the wilderness to Mount Horeb. Only in the Hebrew text, the preposition is behind the wilderness. Moses takes the sheep behind the wilderness, and there he sees a strange phenomenon, a burning bush, and hears a corresponding voice. I'm intrigued by that wording, that phrasing in the Hebrew, behind the wilderness, and what it suggests to us as the story unfolds, a spiritual experience that is that of people of faith of all the ages throughout time, that experience that the wilderness can hide treasure, can be a place of unanticipated gifts, of grace and illumination. Moses went behind the wilderness and there encountered God. The artist Georgia O'Keeffe gave us a modern analog to that spiritual reality. Residing in the forsaken desert reaches of northern New Mexico, she beheld and then cast onto the canvas the treasury of color, tones and hues and shades of light and shadow, in all its brilliance, that she could see there in the wilderness where others could not. "People think the desert is barren," she once wrote, "but in truth, it is filled with secret and glorious color." Behind the wilderness, hidden treasure. We're in a wilderness of sorts, aren't we? far more difficult for some than for me, and maybe than for you, but challenging nonetheless for all of us, challenging for an entire planet at one level, to one degree or another, a pandemic that has taken jobs and health and lives and school and routines and stability and inner calm and domestic tranquility away from us, overlaid with social strain and upheaval, reckonings with our nation's past and present, racial divides and disparities, a wilderness. Is there something behind that wilderness? Is there an epiphany, a revealing of God in the midst of all of this struggle? Is there for us a burning bush, a voice, a presence, a revealing of a path to freedom and wholeness and peace? Does the wilderness hide treasure by which we might find hope and healing for our lives, our communities, our nation, our world? Usually it's the map that leads to the treasure. In this instance, such a map would be the treasure, the map that leads us into life and reconciliation. We have a young neighbor, a pair of daughters who are usually inside, cordoned off their schooling at home, and sometimes they make an appearance on the sidewalk, and Liz and I brighten when they do. We come and stand on our porch and engage them, and Liz saw one of them the other day and said to her, "You look so tall. Can you grow during the pandemic?" And she said, "It's hard to grow, but you can grow. You can grow. And we must seek to grow, even during this time, to open ourselves to the risk that beyond orientation, we go into disorientation openly, willingly, receptively, in order to be found in reorientation, transformation. We can grow, choosing to leave behind an old order and allow for the disorder, as Richard Rohr would put it, that leads us finally to a reordering, a new ordering, a transformation of our lives, our society. We can grow. As a church, we've endeavored in the month of August to be about holy conversations, grace notes and possibilities, in Zoom gatherings and surveys and pictures we share with one another, lament and loss, grief and gratitude, even sometimes tears in that sharing, and often laughter, the commingling of those things, and in all of it, a deepening of our relationships with each other, a sense that a conversation about grace really became conversations by grace. New expressions of pathways and fresh possibilities for being the church and how, and finding that map that is the treasure that leads us to be the people of God in new and faithful ways during this time and beyond it. Behind the wilderness, we've sought to encounter the burning bush. Maybe only there, in the wilderness can it be discovered at all? God calls from that mysterious burning bush, Moses, and Moses turns and says, "Here I am." And God says to Moses, "Come no closer." It is perhaps the first recorded instance of physical distancing. "Come no closer, Moses. The place where you're standing is holy ground. Remove your sandals while you are here. You will deliver my people from Egypt," God continues. And Moses says, "Who am I to do such a thing? Who am I?" Have you ever heard those words before? A better question: have you ever spoken those words before? An even better question: have you ever not, but answered instead, "Here I am, Lord. I have heard you calling. I will go where you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart." We can be forgiven if that's not been our answer always. We can be forgiven for offering that other response that Laura spoke of earlier, that "Who am I? I'm not ready. I'm not able. I don't know how, where to go. Who am I?" We can be forgiven if that's the way we answer the call of God. Maybe we're tired or timid or terrified. Maybe we've tried before and failed miserably. And that kite of earnest intention and aspiration and hope has gotten tangled up in the power lines and we're done. No, thank you. In my ministry, there is no one who is more challenging to invite into the great work, the gospel work, than those who have been in the great work, the gospel work, before, and were wounded in that work and left it behind. I'm describing, in all those examples of resistance, I'm describing something of an inner wilderness, aren't I? The tired, the timid, the terrified, the "I've tried that and failed," all of those wounds and hurts, the caution related to all of that. We might expect God, when Moses puts up that resistance, to say something like Laura mentioned earlier, "You can do this, Moses. I know you can. You are strong. You have the gifts for this." A cheering section to get Moses up and going. But that's not what we hear. "Who am I?" asks Moses, putting up a wall of defense and dismissal. And God answers, "I will be with you." Those words, "I will be with you," resound through the arc of biblical history and human history. Whenever God's people face fear or hardship or daunting challenges that are way bigger than what we perceive our capacities to be, God speaks a word: "I am with you." No wonder the Anglican priest Sam Wells has said that the most important word in theology is "with." Martin Luther King Jr. comes to mind for us in a fresh way this weekend with a march on Washington, reminiscent of his leading a march on Washington, leading a movement that held such discouragements early and late and all along the way. At one point during the Montgomery bus boycott, months into that boycott, when the city of Montgomery was beginning to feel the pinch economically from that transit system boycott by those expected to sit in the rear of the bus, no longer was this a quaint little protest. It was becoming subversive to the city. Calls came in to Reverend King, about 40 a day on average, harassing him and threatening him. But one night, around midnight, a call came to his home. He picked up the phone. The voice on the other end was unusually hateful, spiteful, vitriolic. "Leave Montgomery now if you do not wish to die." In his book, Stride Toward Freedom, King describes that moment. He hung up the phone. Petrified, he went to the kitchen, fixed himself some coffee, sat down at the kitchen table, pushed the coffee away, cradled his head in his hands. He says, "The words I spoke that night are still vivid in my memory, that moment that became a turning point in my spiritual life. I prayed to God, 'I'm here taking a stand for what I believe is right, but I'm afraid. I'm at the end of my powers. I have nothing left. I can't face it alone.'" It was his Moses moment, on the verge of shuttling those hopes for a new world and turning instead to something safer, something calmer, something more reasonable, a paycheck instead of a vision for God's new society. He was done. "I cannot face it alone." Dr. King says at that moment, he felt the presence of the divine like he had never experienced God before. "I experienced something like a quiet assurance, a voice I could almost really hear saying, 'Stand up for righteousness, stand up for justice, stand up for truth. And I will be with you behind the wilderness treasure.'" God seeks to cross that inner wilderness in each of us, whatever it represents, whatever the defenses, the excuses, the dodges, the tiredness, the timidity, the terror, that tried that before and it failed, like Vanderpost's Aboriginal tracker on the desert places of our lost selves. There comes God to speak a word behind that wilderness, to kindle a flame. Maybe the word is rekindle a flame in our hearts, to do something, to mean something, to give something, to live our lives with purpose beyond our own mere comfort and convenience and reliable paycheck, to love again. If the most important word in theology is with, and maybe the most important word in the life of faith is that word. Again. Jan Richardson, you will know the path not by how it shines before you, but by how it burns within you, leaving you whole as you go from there, blazing with your inarticulate, your inescapable yes. That yes, of course, is different for each of us. For some of us, it's yes, I will open my mind to new ways of thinking about the world, seeing the world, understanding the world. Yes, I will give. Yes, I will serve. Yes, I will volunteer. Yes, I will advocate. Yes, I will cast my vote. Yes, I will write a note. Yes, I will make a mask. I will share my faith. I will pray for the world and its people, for God's shalom to come among us. I will love my neighbor, friend, and stranger, yes, in new and unfamiliar and even frightening ways. Yes, is different for each of us, but it means the same for all of us. It means that God, the Aboriginal tracker, has found a way across that faded desert of our lost selves to the heart and has rekindled that flame. And again, we belong to God. We've found the treasure, and it is a map that leads us into life, bearing gifts of healing and of hope that also turn our way as well. God is calling again, saying, will you go? I will be with you. What will you say this time? How will we answer? I hope with a word to match our deepest hope for the world and for ourselves. Yes.